Welcome to the CSIS podcast, a look at the week's news in foreign policy through the eyes of the experts at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I'm Colin Quinn. President Obama travels to Kenya and Ethiopia this weekend to take part in the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Nairobi and to address the African Union in Addis Ababa. It's also a homecoming of sorts, as the Kenyan leg offers a chance to reconnect with the president's paternal homeland. But sentiments will be far down the agenda on this trip, as security concerns with the rise of the terrorist group Al-Shabaab and economic issues take centre stage. It's also a chance to improve relations with Kenya's president Uhuru Kenyatta, who has recently been absolved of wrongdoing by the International Criminal Court after charges of inciting violence in the 2007 elections. We have four voices on the podcast this week, including myself. We'll hear from Jennifer Cook and Richard Downey in our Africa program later in the show. But first, we get a sense of the issues at play from former ambassador to Kenya, Mark Bellamy.
I think from a substantive level, the trip is, in part, it's recognition that these are two pivotal countries in Africa. This will be the first time a U.S. president, a sitting U.S. president, has visited Kenya or Ethiopia, for that matter. The timing of this trip is good because it will, I think, allow President Obama to acknowledge some very dramatic economic gains and development gains in both of these countries, to underscore the role of the private sector in generating growth and development, and to connect the United States with this positive economic story, certainly at least in Kenya. I think another big issue that will also be important is security. I think security is sort of the dark cloud, if you will, in the hanging over Kenya's positive economic and development story.
And how do you see the relationship right now between the U.S. and Kenya? Have we perhaps lost some ground on that relationship?
The U.S.-Kenya relationship has gone through a bad period recently. There's no doubt about that, really going back 3 or 4 years to the ICC cases, which were very controversial inside Kenya and which had a certainly complicated Kenya's international relations, including with the United States. I think it's taken a while for this to work itself out, and one purpose, I think, of the Obama trip, one goal, I would think, of the Obama trip would be to reset these relations after a turbulent period. There is a very long history of productive bilateral relations between Kenya and the United States, and I think this trip will be an opportunity to find a number of ways to get that relationship back to where it was before these recent tensions.
And beyond the top levels on the streets and among the people of Kenya, obviously you've served there. What kind of opinion and what kind of energy, I suppose, is going to be on the streets now that this visit is happening?
I was talking with some journalist friends in Kenya today, and they confirmed what I was pretty sure was the case, which is there's enormous popular enthusiasm. They were wondering how in the world the government of Kenya is just going to be able to manage the crowd control. So that is a challenge. Nairobi, the capital, will be pretty much on lockdown during the president's visit there. Expectations are really high, obviously, and that actually poses a challenge for President Obama, because there's no way he or any other president, for that matter, could satisfy all of these very high expectations. So while it is, yes, it's a homecoming that will thrill some and will disappoint others. There's just no way around that.
We talked about security. The economy is a big one as well. Is there anything that you'd like to see pushed harder, or anything that you're going to be keeping an eye on as these meetings take place?
Yes, I think the one sensitive issue, and sensitive in also in the context of the troubled relationship we just discussed, will be President Obama's willingness to address human rights problems and problems of corruption and of governance in Kenya. There is a great deal of concern in Kenya and amongst observers of Kenya that the government has limited the space in which a truly free media, civil society organizations, non-governmental organizations, watchdog groups, and so forth are able to operate. Those communities feel that they're under significant pressure. And it will be important, I think, for President Obama to address this issue, find an effective way to address this issue, both publicly and in his private conversations with President Kenyatta. I think that will be one indicator of how successful this trip is in terms of resetting the bilateral relationship and delivering an important message from the United States to our Kenyan partners.
In recent years, and this is not just isolated to Kenya, but China has obviously had a much bigger footprint on the continent. Is there anything you'd recommend for the U.S. to get a better foothold, to leverage what they already have in order to become a bigger player, not only in Kenya, but in the region and the continent generally?
I think, yes, China has made great gains in Africa over the past decade, including in Kenya. The Chinese presence is much more significant than it was a decade ago. I think it would be a mistake for the United States to try to somehow compete with China or to take its cues from what China is doing in Kenya or elsewhere. I think the best course for the U.S. And for President Obama on this trip is to, one, to look at the economic progress that is being made, emphasize the importance of the private sector in driving that progress, and look for ways to connect American investors and American entrepreneurs with what's occurring in Kenya. I think that's something Kenyans themselves would welcome. So this entrepreneurship summit actually does have, I believe, a useful substantive purpose. Otherwise, I think the United States will need to make some important gains with Kenya on this whole issue of security. That's not an area, incidentally, where China has a lot to offer to Kenya, but it is an area where we can offer advice and support that helps Kenya back away from some of these unhelpful policies it's been following and move towards some more productive solutions to this al-Shabaab menace. And I would not back off, even if there may be some pressure from the Kenyan side to do so, on issues of human rights and governance. Those have to be part of a healthy U.S.-Kenyan relationship. We have to be able to talk about those issues. Historically, we have done so, and I think it would be a mistake to back off from that now.
This entrepreneurship summit is a sign of the progress Kenya's been making. I want to ask about the importance of seeing Kenya, seeing countries in this region that usually it's a very singular narrative. Security and development is usually a big part of it, but kind of shifting the way people think about Africa to award a more positive light.
Right. I think this is actually one of the messages that President Obama probably wants to carry to Kenya and to East Africa, and to sort of impress upon Africans that Americans recognize this shift and want to facilitate it and be part of it. But also that same message being replayed to American investors and American audiences, saying Africa has in many ways over the past decade moved into a different place. The old narratives that we associate with Africa, the chronic underdevelopment, the humanitarian crises, and so forth, is not the full story. It's not even in many cases the correct story. And so I think that this is an opportunity to shift that perspective and to begin to think about Africa in maybe more in terms of investment and trade, and a little less in terms of big development projects and big humanitarian interventions.
It's a lot to think about. Ambassador Bellamy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Colm. It's been a pleasure.
And of course, the president isn't just visiting Kenya. He also makes a stop in Ethiopia. Joining me on the phone to talk about that, as well as the president's legacy in Africa, are Jennifer Cook, director of our Africa program, and Richard Downey, our senior fellow.
Well, I think that there's a lot of controversy ahead of the Ethiopia trip. People asking, particularly human rights advocates, asking why Ethiopia deserves a visit from President Obama. The timing's somewhat unfortunate. It comes only 2 months after the ruling party swept the board in the national elections, winning every single seat in parliament. Civil society is virtually non-existent in Ethiopia. This is a very authoritarian government. But you know, U.S. has a broad set of interests in Ethiopia. Ethiopia has been a very important partner regionally on security, providing peacekeepers to various missions in Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan. And it's also been a very effective development partner for the United States. It tends to use U.S. assistance pretty smartly, and that's actually had some real effects on the ground in terms of addressing and alleviating poverty, addressing global health concerns, and so on. So Ethiopia is an interesting case. It almost sort of epitomizes the challenges of difficult partners, difficult allies that the United States has around the world, really, that has many different interests, and it has to try and balance those interests. And human rights advocates will argue that the push for democracy and good governance gets relegated. The US will deny that, but certainly it's a complicated set of interests to try and balance in Ethiopia.
Well, just one of the things that kind of the controversy over the Ethiopia trip is kind of pushing out is that he's actually going there also to speak to the African Union. Hmm. And I mean, I think that's important. It's getting somewhat overshadowed by the fact that the African Union is headquartered in Ethiopia. But, you know, this is at a time that African regional bodies and kind of a critical mass of kind of forward-thinking African leaders can make a big difference on the peace and security front, on the economic development, on Pan-African issues of regional integration and so forth. So it's a shame that that's kind of now a second-tier issue when it was ostensibly the reason he was going to Addis in the first place.
And Jennifer, maybe you could fill us in. You know, George W. Bush had a big signature policy, which was this PEPFAR initiative. Now, you can look at Obama and say that perhaps that this Power Africa initiative might be his legacy in Africa. But how has that been going, and what's it kind of need to get off the ground?
Yeah, in fact, President Bush had two big ones. One was the HIV through the PEPFAR initiative. The other was the Millennium Challenge account. You know, President Obama hasn't had the kind of budget surplus that allowed those big initiatives to play out. And Power Africa is somewhat more streamlined. It brings fewer resources to the table. But nonetheless, it gets at a critical block to kind of Africa's economic growth, economic development, and investment climate. And that is generating reliable and affordable electricity. So I think it's a hugely important initiative and focused on the right thing. Look, it's only just completed its second year. It's very much focused on facilitating private sector investment into the power sector. So not so much building the power sector, but getting private sector to partner with African governments on this. You know, it's very ambitious, not a whole lot of new resources put to it. And it relies heavily on African governments kind of setting the terms, the reforms needed within the sector to make this ultimately work. At the same time, it's kind of hampered by some of the U.S. domestic policy debates. One is on, the role of the Export-Import Bank, which is just being shut down, which should be playing an enormous important role and is really kind of the exact thing that the U.S. needs to encourage U.S. business to go into Africa. So for U.S.-Africa commercial relationships and for Power Africa, the shutdown of EXIM, I think, is a real shame, in fact. OPIC has some constraints, although it's going to grow in the coming year. But again, that's a critical institution to that relationship. And then there's the whole debate about whether OPIC can fund projects based on fossil fuel rather than renewables, and so the whole renewable debate comes in. So Power Africa, again, it's very important. It's got some important limitations, and it's got something of a balancing act to do as it navigates U.S. domestic politics. But as I say, I think, as you say, I think it will be kind of considered Obama's legacy initiative in Africa, along with, I would say, a broader shift toward taking the commercial and the economic relationship much more seriously than the U.S. has in the past. And so moving, not turning a back on kind of the humanitarian development side, but this kind of gradual shift to a more commercial relationship of partnership.
And I'm sure that you guys come up against this all the time, but With all such competing priorities around the world, with such focus on the Middle East, this rebalancing to Asia, what can be done to show people the importance of Africa? What kind of recommendations would you guys have for people to understand its importance and understand why it would need to have a focus?
Well, I think part of the problem is that there are a very small number of constituencies that are engaged on African issues in the United States, and they tend to focus on aid and development issues, on conflict resolution, and these are all important issues. But Africa is more diverse and broader than that, and there are economic trade investment opportunities that we've been talking about, and yet there's a tendency to focus on the negatives rather than the positives. So I think part of the issue is that a broader spectrum of people needs to get engaged and up to speed on Africa, and that includes business, U.S. business, which has been very reluctant to invest, as I mentioned, includes the U.S. media, for example, which covers the continent pretty abysmally, to be honest, and has very few reporters there who tend to focus on the sort of tired, important but very narrow issues in Africa of conflict, disease, and so forth. So I think, you know, we all have a responsibility to get a little bit more sophisticated on Africa, to be a little bit more nuanced, to appreciate the vast diversity of the continent, that the success stories as well as the chronic failures that we tend to get fixated on.
In fact, that's kind of the importance of these kinds of presidential trips, and it's a shame that it's such a short trip. It's just 2 days, but these are the moments to kind of elevate what Africa means to the United States to a much broader U.S. policy and broader public audience. That's why I think balancing the message and not solely focusing on all very good or focusing solely on assistance and disease and conflict side is important. So being able to convey to the U.S. public the diversity and the nuance of what goes on in a huge and varied continent.
Yeah, I think that's right, Jennifer, and that's why I sort of almost hope that the Kenya trip doesn't become a kind of diversion, a story about, you know, Obama's heritage and his sort of return to visiting family members. And I hope actually that the coverage is a bit more broad than that, and it actually does recognize that the US has interests at stake in Kenya, important interests, and it's not just some frivolous side trip for President Obama. And I'm sure he wouldn't want to present it that way as well.
No, it should be a news story, not a feature story.
And that was Jennifer Cook rounding out our show today. For more, as always, you can visit csis.org. I'm Colin Quinn. Thanks for listening.